right, we are back with episode 499 of The Critical Myth. Yes, just one short. I am John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville. So if the trench coat of the first guy who came before the second guy gets mistaken for being the second guy, does he have any right to complain?
Gosh, I was never good at these complex math questions. This is Gary from Jacksonville, and I'm interested in some of the new news stories that we have coming up, so hopefully we'll be able to talk about those.
Yes, that's right, and we are going to be wrapping up this week's genre news, and then also wrapping up our episodic discussion. So before we go into any further ado, Edmund, if you could please.
Absolutely. I have to warn you, I'm contractually obligated to warn you that we might spoil you about some of the stuff in the news, some of the stuff in the episodes, but we always try and leave a week before we do that.
That's right, we certainly do. And let's see, as I look at our list here, why don't you go ahead and take the first one, Edmund?
Certainly. And that is that Sci-Fi and Alson TV are announcing the start of production on a 10-episode epic space drama called Expanse. This is based on one of those international best-selling book series of the same name. And thriller set 200 years in the future, after we have actually managed to colonize the solar system. We have a hardened detective, a rogue ship captain coming together to search for a young woman, and evolves into a race across the solar system. So I'm seeing a lot of potential tropes there, we will have to wait and see how it all plays out.
Yes, an interesting development of a show that is perhaps going to be coming to our screens sooner rather than later. But, well, if that feels like good conventional sci-fi, perhaps at least with a good solid pedigree behind it as far as, you know, literary sci-fi, there are some other choices being made out there that are a bit less understandable, a little more perplexing. Let's start with this one. Fox is developing a modernized Peter Pan series from the creator of The Secret Circle. The network is developing a show called League of Pan, a modern twist on the story of Peter Pan and the Lost Boys. It centers on the lives of the Lost Boys 15 years after they've left Neverland. Described as it keeps getting better, grounded, edgy, soapy thriller.
Okay, this is not a spinoff of Once Upon a Time, right?
No. Okay. The potential series is set in contemporary Los Angeles and follows the now adult men as they're forced to work together to figure out who's killing them off one by one. Unfortunately, they weren't on good terms with each other when they left Neverland, so they'll have to overcome rivalries and grudges if they want to stay alive and rediscover the magic they once had. Wasn't there a show on TNT or TBS called like Men of a Certain Age with Scott Bakula that now I'm suddenly thinking should have been this show?
I think to some extent it kind of was this show, but
in certain metaphorical terms, anyhow.
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
It seems to me that somebody has noticed that Once Upon a Time has been on for eons over on ABC, and maybe we can come up with something similar by taking one of the storylines they already used and threw away and updating it.
And also realize Disney does not actually own Peter Pan.
Yes.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. The thing is that as ludicrous as this sounds, it all comes down to the execution. I think it would be great for a show like this to come along and show Once Upon a Time just what they've been doing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, nothing, however, I think is going to save this next one. And Gary, I'm sorry, you're next up on the list.
I knew when I saw this on the list I was going to end up with it. So. Anyway. And let me just say, I do have several Richie Rich comic books. We're talking about Netflix ordering, though, a whole Richie Rich TV series. They're going to order it, and it's going to be a comedy series based on Richie Rich. Jake Brennan will play the title character, also known as the richest kid in the world. The series, an adaptation of the 1980s cartoon, for those of you who got up early on Saturday mornings back then, which was also based on the 1950s comics for your parents who went up early and bought the comic book. There'll be 21 30-minute episodes that's gotten sold for, and it will chronicle Richie's adventures with his friends after he makes $1 trillion by inventing a new green technology and moves into a mansion.
Okay.
Okay, so he's nouveau riche as opposed to existing rich, which is sort of how it was typically done. So I imagine there will be lots of hijinks with his unrich friends, and as well as money being thrown around all over the place. Perhaps he'll have that that dollar bathing pool that he used to have. Or I don't know how crazy they're going to go with this. Although it is, just to put this actual subject matter aside, this is Netflix yet again creating some more original programming to fill their original programming coffers, so they're not as beholden to other sources. So at least they're still trying. I don't know if they're going to make it, but they are. At least they are still trying to create original content. And in the light of news such as HBO being able to spin off all their content to web-only service, you know, the playing field is really shaping up.
Yeah, I'm glad that they didn't try and do like a gritty reimagining of Richie Rich. I don't know.
I'd really love to see the pickpocket version, you know, where he makes all his money shaking people down. No,
the inevitable Quentin Tarantino version of Richie Rich. Anyway, Edmonds, save us from this absurdity, and maybe just take us into a different realm of absurdity.
Yes, I think I can do that. Our latest casting news comes from American Horror Story, where Lily Rabe, who has appeared, who will now have appeared in all four series as different characters, as is the wont in this show, she will actually be returning but reprising her role of Sister Mary Eunice from American Horror Story Asylum. And for those looking forward to that, she will be appearing in Freak Show's 10th episode.
Okay. So one of the things that's kind of interesting about this is that there is now at least some degree of admission that they are going to be, or that even though they're not going to make a big deal out of it, all of these one season arcs are in some way interconnected.
Yes.
Are they? I was not
apparently aware. Yes, and they say that when everything comes to a close, that it will be revealed or whatever, which to me just sounds like we'll figure out how this all works later. But yeah, that's an interesting kind of, again, this is probably the way that they should have done a show like Heroes or 24 or whatever.
Other than the irony of that, they were going to do a show like Heroes that way.
Yes. I think we lost Gary. No,
no,
that was weird.
Yes. We lost a phantom guest. Okay.
All right, that was very strange. All right, so let's see. I will take this last one here. TNT greenlights drama Agent X, starring Sharon Stone, Jeff Hefner, I guess, and Gerald McRaney. At first I thought perhaps this was yet another Marvel show coming out of nowhere, but no, apparently not. It's a high-octane drama. Boy, that's true, isn't it?
Well, I already know that they're gearing it towards an older mindset with a expletive like that.
Yes. Pilot penned by the Bourne Identity writer, William Blake Heron. Okay. All right, well, I can see what they're going for here. They're kind of trying to hit the older demographic, but perhaps a more a younger perspective on the direction, perhaps. But let's see. What is this supposed to be about? In the actual article, it's not just a high octane drama in the headline, but it's a spirited action drama in the article. So essentially, it's a 10-episode order for the first season, coming in the second half of 2015. And here's the blurb. In times of extreme crisis, when traditional law and government aren't in a position to help, there is an unseen hand that works to protect this country and its citizens from all manner of threats by any means necessary. Hidden from the view of the public, and I like how they have the view here hyperlinked to show the view. But anyway.
Yes. I was going to point that out if you didn't, so thank you.
Yes. Hidden from the view of the public and even from the president, there is a top secret agent who is trained and ready to serve, deployed only at the careful discretion of the vice president. Well, okay.
So it's alternate universe where the VP actually has power. Okay.
Yes. Wow. Yes. That's hilarious. I'm wondering when they're going to have the inevitable crossover with Legends, but
yes,
at any rate.
Exactly.
TNT seems to have the corner on these kinds of shows these days. I mean, they have some stiff competition out there, but this could be promising. It depends. It's going to have a lot to do with execution, as with so many other things. But that having been said, we are therefore done with this week's genre news, and we are going to move on to our break and then the episode discussions for the rest of the week. And maybe I'll even figure out what the heck I'm doing right now. Okay.
It's $4.99, John. You should have it.
Time for a break. right, then. We are going to start off with episodic discussion. And I know that I have this buried in the quick hits here, but Gary, I think you mentioned that you had seen the premiere episode for Homeland this season?
Yes, I did, actually. I was a little curious. I had mixed feelings about last season. I've started to randomly watch it, and I was curious how they were going to open the season, about, you know, sort of how much Carrie was going to be functional, non-functional, crazed. What Carrie are we going to see this season?
Now, did you see just the first hour or both both hours?
Just the first episode.
Okay, so that was – let me go ahead and just run the – Season 4, Episode 1, The Drone Queen. Season 4 begins with Carrie, the CIA chief of station in Kabul, making a critical decision when her counterpart in Islamabad delivers urgent intelligence on a high-value target. Back in the U.S., Saul struggles to adjust to the private sector. Edmund, by the way, did you happen to catch this?
Yes, I have been keeping up with the new season.
Okay, very good. Gary, what would you give this episode? I'm curious.
I would give it an 8.
Okay, and Edmund, what would you give this episode?
7.5.
Okay, yeah, I'm leaning towards the 8 myself. At least this opening hour, I thought, was a real improvement over the previous season, generally speaking. A bit of a return to form. Seems like, Edmund, you're still kind of hedging your bets a little bit, but,
I think this is definitely a case where, I mean, I had the hesitation in my voice, and I think this is more a case of, it did seem like a return to form, and, without the back history on this show, I probably would have given it an 8, but it's just, I don't trust them yet, so.
You don't trust the CIA. Yeah. How surprising.
Oh, no, I trust the CIA. It's Howard Gordon I don't trust.
That was
Yeah, that's Edmund. Yes. Now, to be fair, I know that I have all 5 of the episodes that have aired here listed in our quick hits, but I've only been through 4 of them. So we'll kind of run through a few more here. Gary, I did want to get your other opinion on this.
Real easy. I like Carrie being shown as competent. I understand that she's been labeled by certain parts of the CIA as, you know, uncooperative, nuts, and loose cannon and that type of thing. But at the same time, she's, you know, she's been effective and continues to be effective, and enough people realize that to let her go. You know, I enjoyed her competency from, you know, shaking her tail to having her own secret agent ring set up. I enjoy watching, you know, competent women in roles. So many times they're either, you know, backup or partnered with, that, you know, to see somebody sort of, you know, on their own doing a woman doing well is a welcome change in what, especially in this secret spy world where often women are, you know, relegated to second fiddle.
Yes. I can say that the fact that Carrie is no longer kind of tied to Brody and his overextended welcome on the show,
yes, and his and his overextended family. Let's not forget.
Yes, exactly. The albatross was straight across his shoulders. But in this case, I think that they did a nice job of trying to move on in this first episode, and that kind of helped. Now, Gary, I don't know if you want us to continue while you're on. I don't want to spoil it for you if you have any intentions of going back and catching up, but
actually, no, I do have intentions of catching up. So I will gracefully bow out at this point, and I hope the conversation is still upbeat on the show as I leave.
Okay. Well, be sure to completely bow out then. Okay.
Oh boy. Okay. Take care, everyone.
Yeah. All right. Bye, Gary.
Yes. We have to make sure everyone is as rested as possible for the next episode.
Yes.
Attention to that number, people. Anyway, going on then to Season 4, Episode 2, Trilon and Perisphere, they get points for the title.
Absolutely.
Recap being, an official inquiry brings Carrie back to the U.S., where she struggles with her ambivalence towards motherhood.
Mm-hmm.
Not just hers. Anyway, meanwhile, Quinn spirals out of control, and a disgraced former case officer reveals disturbing new information. What would you give this, Edmund?
Yeah, of course. I'm realizing now the other issue is I think I was thinking more in terms of stuff that happened in both of these episodes. So, given the fact I gave one a 7.5, I have to give two a 7.
Okay, just to balance it out a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay, I understand. I'm going to give it a 6.
Okay.
Which ultimately balances it out exactly the same way.
So yeah, well, I mean, I'm assuming this is the slight variation in scores is how did we react to Carrie deciding whether or not she's going to drown her baby?
That would probably be the crux of it.
Yeah.
But believe it or not, the actual moment wasn't the thing that bothered me. Although, well, I shouldn't say it that way. In the context of the story, I found it very disturbing. However, I didn't feel like that was the problematic moment of the episode. It was the fact that she was dealing with that at all was the problem of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
It brought all of the things back that I just was dreading that they would do. Thankfully, by the end of the episode, the writers and the characters came to the conclusion that no, we really should not do this.
Yes.
let's get it out of the way now and never have Carrie and motherhood in the same sentence again.
Yes. Of course, somebody should, somebody should have thought about that before they put the blue Sharpie Plus on the stacks of pregnancy sticks from last season. But anyway.
Exactly. Yeah. I realized that they had to deal with this in some way, shape, or form. I feel like this was way too much time spent on it.
Mm-hmm.
Which, considering it was one subplot of one episode, is saying an awful lot about how little I want to see the baby plot on Homeland.
Yes.
Matched, however, with some really bizarre directions with Quinn.
With Quinn, yes.
This just was like night and day from the first hour. The first hour had me back to the Homeland where I was on the edge of my seat and just cringing at how situations were going completely awry, but in this episode where they kind of come away from the whole mystery of what's going on with Sandy and why he was killed and everything else, and they got into this interpersonal crap, it mm-hmm. just fell apart again.
Yep.
That moves us on to season 4, episode 3, Shawar Kamiz. Carrie recruits a key asset. Quinn locates a potential lead. Hey, the writers for the promos from AMC came to visit Showtime.
Yes.
And I'm trying to recall what happened in that episode.
Yeah, no, yeah.
As I try and also spell this as I type it into the spreadsheet, okay, what would you give this one?
I will give this one a. Again, I'm having because we're doing this after the fact. Yeah, to in separating this episode out on its own. Since we've got a big moment coming up in the next one, I'll give this one a. I'll go back to the 7.5.
Yeah, that's actually where I land as well. I don't think it was nearly as strong as the premiere, but it was moving back into that territory.
Yeah,
I think this was the one that had a lot more of the intrigue between Carrie trying to get back to where she was supposed to be, to get established as the section head of... Mm-hmm. Is it Islamabad? Yeah.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yes, okay. I was getting myself confused with something else. The tensions there, the difficulty, Saul kind of getting involved and it not really being helpful.
Yep.
Just a lot of nice little things going on there. Farrah and her involvement finally makes sense. It made no sense whatsoever all of the third season. Now it suddenly makes sense for her to be there, and she's an actual character.
Yep.
I enjoyed this one. Between the premiere and this episode, if they had skipped that second one completely and just gone for the premiere to this, I'd be really quite pleased up to this point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not really sure what there was in that second episode that we needed to see. But...
just that they were saying, yep, we're moving on.
Yeah.
And moving on then to season 4, episode 4, Iron in the Fire. Carrie gets a tip. Saul calls in a favor. Farrah uncovers a conspiracy. Well, they're leaving a big thing out of this one. All right, what would you give this one?
I will drop this one to a 6.
I'll be a little more generous with a 6.5, although I completely understand that the last, like, 5 minutes
yep.
drag this one way down.
All that stuff we were saying quite rightly at the beginning about Carrie seeming more competent, etc., just kind of gets completely thrown out the window with her seducing this asset. I mean, it's getting right back to, you know, Carrie lives dangerously. Carrie, you know, steps over the edge, and it. And I mean, yes, they were deliberately making it creepy in terms of the staging and the camera work, etc. But that which in a way made it worse, because it was like, oh, okay, so you guys know what you're doing here, and you're still going there.
Yes, and that all things being equal, I kind of understand what they were going for. I don't want that to kind of be lost in translation here.
Yeah.
However, part of the problem for me is that it happened so relatively quickly that it felt even more forced than it was. If it was something that Carrie was kind of developing over time, I realize that would have felt also a bit even more disturbing, but
what got to me about it was because it seemed like there was an avenue to go this direction that they were building up and then dropped, in terms of Farah coming in, being a novice in the field, having some skills at it. And I thought they were building to a point where, because she certainly she was set up to be the contact. And then they started switching the story some and bringing Carrie in as her superior. But especially since Carrie is supposed to now be in this position of being a head of station and you defer to people, it's like, no, let Farah try and make the approach and mess up or have her conscience step in and say, no, I can't do this. And then Carrie steps in to pick up the pieces. So at least then you have that sense of, you know, no, it's something she's, you know, that is coming up on the spur of the moment, rather than this weirdly calculated lead up to it.
Yeah, it just the writing fell apart in the final act, and not even the final act, but the final few moments of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like that all too familiar Howard Gordon writing staff, knowing that they're at the end of episode 4, so now we've got to have the turn from the introductory phase of the season into the complication phase, so we need to do something big and shocking.
Yes.
To mark the end of the first third of the season. And guys, unfortunately, this is so blatant, and this was the whole, you know, this is the whole problem with being overly slaved to your, to the process and to structure. And at any rate, it just was. The funny thing is that I don't think the actual circumstance, the actual plot point, would have necessarily been. It would have been disturbing. It would have been shocking. But I don't think it would have felt so out of place and just plain over the top, and shock value driven if it had been led up to better.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, because certainly in terms of what's happening, I might have a problem with it morally, but in terms of showing a covert operation, you know, absolutely, honeypots and sex has, you know, has been part of the go-tos. So it wasn't a matter of the fact that it was happening; it was just the way it was being presented just did not work.
Yeah, it was more. That's exactly it. It was like I was feeling like they were original. At least at first I thought, oh, okay, she's starting to work the process.
Yeah.
And then it would come to, you know, a relative end, and then it would continue in the next episode. And I'm sure that it will continue in the next episode, but the fact that they went here and just kept going with it and rushed it as much as they did made it feel like it made it even more obvious that it had not been well considered. But that all being the case, I mean, we'll kind of check in on Homeland as we go, but the problem with this show right now is that none of the things that we're talking about here in the first season would have been a momentum killer or really that much of a detraction, because they did things just as shocking, if not more so, in the first season.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that now it's the fourth season, and it comes after the show has lost so much of its momentum and so much of its even integrity, I would say. They've lost our trust. And so now when they do something like this, we're a lot more cynical about it. And that's, I think, the message that I'm taking away from it. We might as well go ahead and just finish out the quick hits and then go on to things. It's a little bit out of order, but we'll go ahead and do that. We're skipping Star Wars Rebels.
Right, until Gary catches
Gary
up.
Gary can catch up. Same thing with Constantine, because I really feel like we need his way in on that.
Yes.
So I'll just move over to The Vampire Diaries, Season 6, Episode 3, Welcome to Paradise. Elena and Caroline meet at a swimming hole where Elena plans to introduce her to Liam, but things don't go quite as planned. Meanwhile, Tyler asks Liv for a favor. Stefan returns to Mystic Falls and notices a strange change in Elena. Jeremy makes a discovery about the anti-magic spell that could put Elena in danger, and Damon and Bonnie stumble upon clues that lead them to believe they are not alone. And boy, is that a lot of words. I will give this a 7. Yep. The season just a little bit of a slow start. Season 6, Episode 4, Black Hole Sun. Damon relives a horrible day in order to find his way home. Elsewhere, Alaric tries to help Jeremy cope with loss. Stefan teaches Elena about creating a new identity, and Trip shares a dark secret with Matt. I felt this was a little bit better and gave it a 7.5. If you could take the next one, please.
Certainly. Although I am wondering, did Damon run into Bill Murray during his reliving his horrible day?
No, unfortunately. Oh. Otherwise, it might have gone up to an 8.
Okay. So next we have The Good Wife, Season 6, Episode 5, Shiny Objects. Alicia and Dean face familiar foes in Elsbeth Taschioni and Raina Hecht when they represent a fired female CEO in a sex discrimination suit. Meanwhile, the Floric Igos Lockhart firm are in panic mode when a hacker seizes control of their files and threatens to delete them if a ransom demand isn't met.
That's right. And Henry gave this one, as I am waiting for the internet to catch up, an uncharacteristic 7.
Ah.
So a bit of a drop from the previous episodes of the season.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, and then there is the next episode.
Which is Season 6, Episode 6, Old Spice. Alicia and Elsbeth put their legal battle aside when the government brings economic espionage charges against both of their clients. Meanwhile, Diane tries to move her law firm into the Lockhart Gardner Canning office space, which leads to a fight with her former partners, David Lee and Lewis Canning.
And once again, Henry gave this one a 7. So the last two episodes, much lower than his typical reaction to The Good Wife. So a little bit worrisome, I suppose, for those who are fans of that show. All right. From there, we have a couple shows that I've been keeping up with. First off, the somewhat surprising season so far for Resurrection. Season 2, Episode 4, Old Scars. Margaret convinces Lucille to host a dinner celebrating Jacob's return, but the evening turns tense with the arrival of unexpected guests who end up putting a further strain on family relations. Meanwhile, Bellamy continues to research the history of the mysterious bones, and Rachel receives unsettling news about her baby. I would give this one an 8.
Ah.
This show is actually going in some very disturbing directions, and I'm quite happy with that. Yeah, Michelle Fairley is just turning out to be the best addition to the show that you could ever ask for.
Mm-hmm. And intriguingly, given from what little bits and pieces I've heard about her character, so we could say that for some people missing her on another series, she's finding a way to channel that over here.
Oh yeah. There was this one scene, and I think it was either this episode or the one before, where they revealed that her background is that she grew up when the town was a lot more religiously based, and she was basically very fervent. And when people back then were among the returned in that era, when they came back, they were assumed to be demonic.
Of course, yes.
Now, this is just the 1950s here we're talking about, so,
yes.
You know. This evokes certain myths or folklore of Southern fear of the unknown, so to speak. But the interesting thing, of course, is that what they would do is, you know, so this person was dead, he seems to come back, well, we're going to hang him.
Mm-hmm.
Again.
Mm-hmm.
And again.
Mm-hmm.
And again. And it just, yeah, it
wow.
There's this monologue that she does at the end of the episode that is just creepy as it gets. But anyway, Season 2, Episode 5, Will. Margaret proves she's a force to be reckoned with when, to her displeasure, Barbara makes strides in mending her relationship with Fred and Maggie. Elsewhere, Bellamy's situation grows more precarious as he struggles to keep his secret from Maggie, all the while taking desperate measures to deal with a strange virus that is spreading among the returned. Yes, something is killing them off, kind of.
Ah.
yes, it's getting a lot more dangerous to be among the resurrected out there. So there's certain hints that the government is taking action against them.
Mm-hmm.
Bellamy is, of course, one of the returned now, which makes things an awful lot more interesting on that front. All I can say is that I don't know that the show's tone or pacing has particularly been repaired, but the subject matter has gotten remarkably darker. And so, again, I give this one an 8. This is a show that I'm actually looking forward to.
Wow.
Which I never thought would be the case, when they just never seemed to be picking up on the potential within the storyline during its short first season. This is also going to have a short second season, only 13 episodes, I believe. And if the ratings continue as they are, it will be the only 13 episodes of the season, and probably the end of it. But at least it seems to be going out on a good footing. So there's that to consider. Let's see. Moving on then to another show that I watch, and that is The Originals, Season 2, Episode 3, Every Mother's Son. A dinner invitation from Esther makes Klaus and Elijah suspicious of their mother's intentions, but they hope a new witch named Lenore can help them outsmart her. Meanwhile, Esther shares a secret about Klaus's childhood and reveals what she has in store for her children. And as you can probably imagine, it's nothing good.
Indeed.
Yes. I gave this one an 8. The spinoff in this case is doing much better than the original right now. That continues into Season 2, Episode 4, Live and Let Die. Davina takes Michael to her family cabin in the woods. Haley learns that Vincent is recruiting unsuspecting teens into a werewolf army. It's always unfortunate. Cammy tries to understand Klaus' deeply rooted hatred for his parents. Caleb tries to locate the missing white oak stake and has a dangerous encounter at the cabin. Josh opens up to an unexpected ally. There's a lot more bloodletting in this episode than this would all indicate. And again, I gave this one an 8. So right now, this is kind of the one holding the banner for the franchise right now. It seems like getting them out of Mystic Falls and into New Orleans has been helpful in this particular case.
Very good.
For those who understand what I'm talking about, I'm sure that you agree. But Edmund, I think you should take the next two, because I have a feeling that you actually have some stake in these.
Not really, but I'll still take them anyway. I am finding it rather amusing that yes, you got saddled with the CW recaps, and I get saddled with the much shorter FX recaps. American Horror Story, Season 4, Episode 2, Massacres and Matinees. A man from Ethel's troubled past arrives at camp. Meanwhile, Gloria arranges a playdate for Dandy. And I have not been following American Horror Story, so I cannot...
No, but I thought you would be interested to know how the how the season's progressing so far. That was what I was alluding to.
Yes.
I did not think that you actually have been watching. Nadim has been watching, however, and providing reviews over on VogNetwork.com. He gave this episode a 9.5.
Wow.
So very high mark for that episode.
Okay.
And the next one would be...
And then the next one is Season 4, Episode 3, Edward Mordrake, Part 1. Jimmy is captivated by a woman claiming to be a fortune teller. Meanwhile, Ethel receives surprising news.
Yes, and strangely enough, this one Nadim did not like as much, but it was still quite a bit. He gave it an 8.
Okay.
So, yes. The fun part about all of this is that, at least in these first few episodes, there is a character called Twisty the Clown that might just be the most terrifying thing I have ever seen on television, and I haven't even watched the show yet. So, I'm sure Sam Winchester would agree with me that it's terrifying.
Absolutely.
Yes. All right, those are the quick hits for this week, since we have a couple that we had to skip. And, we still have a couple episodes of other shows out there, but like Homeland, but we will catch up in due time. Let's see. Then we can move on to what is our typical episodic discussion. Now, we're going to skip Doctor Who, because I want to make sure that we
have a full complement.
That's correct. But that leaves a couple other shows out there for us to delve into. We'll see how many we have left for this hour. But, Edmund, which one do you want to tackle first?
Let us tackle, actually, now that I think about it, the other show that involved trench coats this week, Person of Interest.
Very good. And here's the promo.
They fight crime undercover. But CBS This Tuesday.
Detective Jack Forge, Special Task Force.
I guess you're not the only one pretending to be a cop.
This wannabe.
But he thinks he's working a case, and he's gonna get himself killed.
Is in over his head.
Nobody move!
Why
weapon like this could wreak havoc on a city.
How do you do that with your voice? You're like a superhero.
That was so awesome.
New Person of Interest, CBS This Tuesday, 10, 9 Central.
And if you could do the recap, please.
Certainly. This is Person of Interest, Season 4, Episode 6, Pretenders. A mild-mannered office worker gets into major trouble while posing as a detective. Meanwhile, Finch's cover profession takes him to Hong Kong.
Yes, if there's one show where you don't want to pretend that you're in a position of authority right now, Person of Interest would be at the top of the list.
Yes, indeed.
What would you give this one?
I will give this one an 8.5.
All right, and I felt on an 8, although I was kind of in between scores there. Highlights.
Yeah,
here.
I guess for the big thing for me is this was one of those episodes where it was the latest example of the writing staff showing off that they can easily meld different types of episodes now. I mean, in terms of the main story of this this office worker, I mean, use their actual number, but the office worker who's pretending to be a cop and investigating things, and of course getting into deep hot water, was something that could have been treated as one of those filler standalone episodes. I mean, the producers have talked about that doing these 20 plus episodes per season. You know, you just cannot go full intensity the whole way, and there would sometimes be these more sort of off-the-cuff, humorous filler episodes, but in this case, we got that, but then combined with all sorts of other stuff going on. I mean, Finch in Hong Kong having an apparent potential brief encounter that turns out to be much, much more than it appears, and also showing Finch getting quite adept now at his field work, certainly a huge contrast between now and his first fumbling attempts back in the first season or so, so it was just a case of obviously the foot has came off the gas a little bit, but they still managed to just really do a good job of taking a break and keeping the momentum going, I thought.
Now, this was the next appearance of Dominic, the Brotherhood, Elias, and
yes,
the extension of what was going on there. Do you feel like this was a bit better than the introduction, and why would you say that?
Absolutely. This was much better. The way they parsed out the threat and this having this guy the armorer and then have that all tie back into Dominic, I thought did a much better job of building him as this more ominous crime lord figure, somebody who when they got to that great confrontation between him and Elias, it really did feel like a meeting of equals, and this organization now is challenging Elias, who of course has been somewhat on ice, so is trying to reassert his control, but I definitely got the impression of the Brotherhood as a real threat to that this time around.
Yeah, I think maybe this was what I was anticipating coming out of the episode Brotherhood, was that this is where they were going with it. I'm glad that this episode finally or properly set that or framed that, as the case may be. Plus, it's just good to see Elias again,
yes,
kind of following up on this so quickly. And this was another one of those episodes where, Kettle, as you were saying, that it starts off in one place. It seems like it's a bit standalone. It's not really connected to what else is going on in the overall story. And then about halfway through, it takes this little turn, and suddenly there are connections left and right with the bigger picture. And I like the fact that Person of Interest has this down to a science.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They can do this with anything. And I think that's part of the problem with what was going on with Brotherhood, is that it was one of those few examples of where they really didn't do a great job with it.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of dissonant from that perspective, because going back and I was listening to Bronze Thumb's kind of commentary on it, and aside from the fact that it felt like it was reintroducing something that had already been wrapped up, which, again, slight difference of opinion there, but I keyed in on the fact that he really was basically saying that it just was not handled very well.
Yes.
And this episode shows that you can introduce all those elements, and do if you do it right, it doesn't feel dissonant at all. It feels like part of just part of the tapestry of what Samaritan is doing. And yeah, it I enjoyed this one. I liked that how they kind of had their standalone cake and ate it too.
Yes, yes. And what also intrigued me was the way they are building up the crime war now. I particularly like it, given them introducing the Brotherhood as being, you know, and Dominic as being this group savvy enough to try and get their special cell phone network off of the grid. So even though on the surface they seem to be like, you know, oh yes, you know, they're someone who might be able to stay off of Samaritan's radar a little bit, but the way they're introducing them now, it's more like, you know, oh no, this is the sort of group that if Samaritan isn't actively influencing them now, is would certainly be trying to, because Dominic is much more up Samaritan speed than Elias and all of his silly things like morals.
Oh yes, indeed, silly things.
I'm just saying from Samaritan's perspective.
Yes, exactly. What morals? It's whatever's good for Samaritan. Although that's one of the things I think is so creepy about Samaritan is that the way it's being framed is that it's doing what it thinks is best for humanity.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's a very kind of indirect way of approaching the problems and necessities of Asimov's three laws of robotics, perhaps adapted to artificial intelligence.
Yeah, something like that. And the other thing I just wanted to mention, I mean, that whole thing in terms of how much they packed into this episode, but feeling so much more cohesive. And I'm remembering, again, partially because they're all lined up on our list of episodes here, but I mean, Tuesday night in general is becoming this really strong night of television. And one thing I noticed this last Tuesday was, in the case of both the Flash, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and Person of Interest, and increasingly so as it got later in the night with S.H.I.E.L.D. and Person of Interest, having that sense of, you know, thinking like, oh, you know, they probably close to wrapping up this episode, then realizing it's only halfway through.
Oh yeah, all night long. That's what it feels like. It's amazing to me.
Yeah.
Let's see. What shall we move on to next? First of all, how much time do we have left? Do you think enough for one more or two more or what?
We have enough for one more, I would say.
That makes sense. Yes, I would say probably we'll let Supernatural stack up a little bit more. Actually, it's not going to stack up more at all, because this week we just talked about how Tuesday nights is turning out to be a really humdinger of a night for genre TV, and it's election night, so of course there will be none of our shows on this Tuesday, or at the time we're recording. This will have gone out well after that, but we were sad, but that just means that we get to hold off on Supernatural, and we won't be accumulating any more episodes to handle.
Yes,
in the meantime.
Which means we are postponing the Battle of the Trenchcoats to a later date and venue.
That's right. Unfortunately, but that means that we can handle Arrow, and that means we are going to be running a promo before Squeeing. So here it is.
Malcolm Merlyn is in Starling City.
The world is a dangerous place.
The daughter of Ra's al Ghul is not to be trifled with.
You have to do whatever it takes.
I understand you're not killing people these days.
My father may be the demon, but yours is the devil.
Father of the year.
Break your vows. Kill your sister's father.
Kill him!
Arrow, all new. This Wednesday at 8, 7 central on the CW.
And if you could please.
Certainly. Arrow, Season 3, Episode 4, The Magician. Oliver and Nyssa join forces and go after the Dark Archer in order to bring Sarah's killer to justice. Meanwhile, Laurel keeps her distance from Nyssa because she blames her sister's death on the League of Assassins, and Oliver and Roy work on repairing their respective relationships with Thea.
Oh boy. where to begin?
Yeah.
Well, what would you give this one?
I will give this one a 9.
Okay, and I just want to go look up what our friends over at bognetwork.com gave it. In this case, it would likely be... why am I not seeing it? Did Deem not get one out at time? He may not have gotten it out, and I may have forgotten that he didn't get it out, which is possible. So, strike that, reverse it. I'm giving this one a 9 as well.
Yes.
So that should be more than enough to get us started here. Whoa, just what an episode. Like I said, where to begin?
Well, I guess, I mean, just in general, I mean, it was one of those episodes where they were basically kind of starting right from the ending point of the previous. I mean, you had Nissa showing up, drawing down on them, and, naturally not, in fact, shooting Oliver, but we knew that was going to happen or not happen. So then we wind up with this whole in intriguing dynamic of confirming that Merlin is back in town, and these sort of what I'm presuming will be these fluid alliances ebbing and flowing around the characters, with making the natural assumption as we were speculating on after Sarah's death of them assuming it was Merlin, going after Merlin, Nissa being committed to doing it regardless. Bringing up very directly the conflict between the way the League does things and Oliver's new attitudes, but then with Merlin coming in and the whole situation with Thea, and then the whole continuing web of lies and deceptions going on there, I think has been really well done. And this whole Thea essentially turning the tables on her brother and Roy now, and I'm rather intrigued to see how they play out all of those tensions.
One of the things that came to mind, you were just mentioning Thea and her relationship with everybody, is how casually well she lies to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they have no idea what exactly it is that they're up against. And for that all to happen while all this stuff is going on with Nissa and this question of who killed Sarah, and it just... My theory still stands that she is the one who did it. Whether or not it was under orders, I doubt that she could have done it without anybody even being aware of it,
mm-hmm.
Without Malcolm being aware of it, which is in and of itself somewhat uncomfortable to consider. But I do like, if there's one little nit that I have, it's that they really had to sell the idea that Oliver was going to go up against the League of Assassins here, and I feel like that might have been a bit overplayed, just a bit, because I would feel like he'd know better than to just put his foot down here.
Yeah,
as hard as he does. I mean, I understand where he's coming from, but it feels like he's really going overboard with it, and it felt a little forced, but at the same time not so much that it took away completely from the episode.
I guess, to my mind, I mean, it didn't feel too forced. To my mind, I mean, the way they played that out with Merlin managing to convince Oliver, actually did work for me. And the moment that happens, it's you're going to be introducing the conflict with the League. So I mean, I was okay with the way they were handling that end of things, and of course leading up to the much anticipated introduction of Ra's al Ghul at the end. In terms of the way they were building it up to that final moment, I was okay with it, but I can see where it could have problems down the road. But just kind of bring us full circle from when I was saying my scoring of the Homeland premiere was based on past history. I think so this is with Arrow, the tendency is now to give them benefit of the doubt rather than come up with too many things that could go wrong with this, because for the most part they usually don't do that.
Well, I guess I'm not saying that it's necessarily bad as so much as that it wasn't as elegant a progression as I would have preferred.
Mm-hmm.
It felt a little like pushing to make it happen fast. Just the whole them assuming bad intentions on his part.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't know. It's like I understand that it was a hugely devastating situation for Nyssa, but I would have thought she would know, have understood, or at least intellectually to some degree understood, that Oliver was not coming at it from a dismissive or selfish direction, but rather listening perhaps to the fact that he's saying that the evidence doesn't add up.
Mm-hmm.
The motivations aren't there. Yes, one could say that Malcolm is a great liar and could easily be fooling him, but at least not acting like he's trying to start a war with the League of Assassins.
Right.
And framing it that way. I guess it was just, to go from 0 to 100, making it such a black and white situation felt a little bit overplayed. But at the same time, I understand that they're really pushing forward with the narrative here. And they did want to introduce Ra's al Ghul sooner rather than later.
Yep. Yep.
It'll all work out in the end, I'm sure. Because this is Arrow, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
It's earned its benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, anything more to say then about this episode of Arrow?
No, other than it was, I did find the return of Felicity from Central City to be a little amusing in that sort of fake TV way of, yes, I was just somewhere and I'm back now. But...
yes, it was a little bit lampshading is the word that came to mind.
Yes,
but at the same time, it was a little wink to the audience too. I think they kind of knew what they were doing, and
yes,
they didn't try to pretend that it was anything more than that. But there we are. All right, that's it for this week. Obviously, next time we still have a few things to catch up on, but the fact that one of the bigger nights this week is going to be off the air for election night is going to change things up for us. But also, we have our 500th episode coming up next time. So,
wow.
Yeah, we might be a little bit distracted anyway. But thank you for listening, and we will be catching up on all these things next week and next time.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.